Now, I'm sure for many of you over the course of this morning, you'll have received many emails. For some of you, I'm probably sure that you've received far more emails than you would have wanted. And occasionally, I'm sure, for most of us here at some point or other, we've been sent an email warning us about a computer virus. So I wonder if you've ever been sent this one. New virus. There is a new virus out with the code name WORK. If you receive work from your colleagues, your boss, via email or anywhere else, do not touch work under any circumstances. This virus wipes out your private life completely. If you should come into contact with this virus, put on your coat, take two good friends and go straight to the nearest pub. Order three beers, and after repeating that 14 times, you will find that work has been completely deleted from your brain. Forward this warning immediately to at least five friends. Should you realise you do not have five friends, this means that you are already infected by this virus, and work already controls your whole life. Now, it's possibly not the best remedy for the virus work, but that email makes us laugh, doesn't it? Because it pulls at a debate which is very close to home for all of us. Are we in control of our work, or is our work in control of us? I used to work as a management consultant, and I remember one day, well, actually, to be more accurate, it was one night when we were having to work pretty hard, even by management consultancy standards, and my boss decided that we would start a brainstorming meeting at 9 o'clock in the evening. Now, her brain, it may have been able to storm at 9 o'clock in the evening, but I must admit that my brain, I mean, call me a wimp if you want, but my brain, well, it could barely muster a dribble of coherent thought at that time of the night. At that time, I didn't have control of my work. My work had control of me as my boss dictated what took place. I didn't like it. You see, the fact is, don't we know it, that all of us, we like to be in control. We certainly like to think that we're in control of our work, in control of our whole lives. And that is definitely the thinking of the people that James is writing to. Look again, if you will, at that first sentence on the yellow sheets. The first sentence that James writes. He says, now listen, you who say today or tomorrow we'll go to this or that city, spend a year there, carry on business and make money. Now these business people that James is writing to, they think they're in control, don't they? They've written their business plan in Microsoft Word. They've done their financial model in Excel, their spreadsheet wizards. They've gone to the venture capitalists with their PowerPoint presentation and it's far smarter than my one. They have their aim clearly in mind, don't they? Today or tomorrow, we'll go to this or that city, spend a year there, carry on business and make money. They're going to work hard, earn loads of dosh. They've got it sorted. They think they're in control. But there's a problem. In line 13, James tells them right at the start, he tells them to listen. He says, listen. And line 14 tells us what they have to listen to. Look at how James continues. Line 14, he says, why you do not even know what will happen tomorrow. That's true, isn't it? We do not even know what will happen tomorrow. Today we could be earning lots of money, but tomorrow, quick as a flash, we could be made redundant. A collapse of the market, a takeover, a cutback, a reorganisation, it changes everything. I just have to think back over the last month with people that I've spoken to who work around here. Just next door at the BBC, I was chatting with someone from there just the other day. He said this, he said, I'd always sailed through this kind of thing before. And then I was ushered into a room with 200 other people and we were told our jobs would no longer exist from September. But it's not just the BBC. I've spoken to someone at Thompson Travel. Their head office is up by Warren Street Tube Station. I've spoken to someone at the head office of Woolworths up on Marylebone Road. I've spoken to people who work at the Methodist Church Central Office. Redundancies taking place at all of them. We do not even know what will happen tomorrow. That's the truth, isn't it? And I guess some of us here, we may be all too aware of that at the moment. That the future of our work is uncertain. And so too, and even more crucially, is the future of our life. The future of our life, that's uncertain too. Look at how line 14 continues. Look at what James says. He says, what is your life? What is your life? You're a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. Again, I think of situations relevant to me just in the last few weeks. Some friends that I'm really close to, I was best man at their wedding. The wife is pregnant. The baby's due next month. But back in December, she was diagnosed as having lymphoma. So she's been having chemotherapy with the baby still inside of her. And we don't know what the outcome is going to be. I think of an amazing man I knew pretty well. He was a general in the Gulf War. He commanded numerous regiments. He survived that. He survived the Gulf War. He survived all the terrors of the Gulf War. And then last week, age 60, he was killed in a road accident. Now, if I could control the future, if I could control it, I wouldn't want those things happening. But life's unpredictable. We cannot control the future. Now, those things sound shocking, but it is reality. All of us here, all of us, we probably know similar situations with people close to us. Life is unpredictable. And life's brief, too. What is your life? You're a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. Like the spray of my deodorant. I'm sorry, it's not a very high-quality deodorant, but like the spray of my deodorant that I sprayed on this morning to make sure that I'm smelling sweetly for you all. I sprayed it, could see it for a second, and then it vanishes. Or listen to Bruce Willis, the famous actor. Listen to what Bruce Willis said when he was interviewed in the Sunday Times. Bruce Willis said this. He said, people think we have all the time in the world, that we're going to live forever. I know we don't. Life can be snapped out of you in a second, even if you live to be 80 or 90. It still goes by in a flash. When you're a kid, summer seems like forever. Now months go by in a blink. Have we heard that somewhere before? Bruce Willis is with James, isn't he? You are a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. Life is brief. In 1928, there were a group of the world's most successful financiers, and they met at the Edgewater Beach Hotel in Chicago. The following were present: the president of the largest utility company, the greatest wheat speculator, the president of the New York Stock Exchange, a member of the president's cabinet, the greatest bear in Wall Street, the president of the Bank of International Settlements, the head of the world's greatest monopoly. Collectively, these tycoons, they controlled more wealth than was in the US Treasury at that time. For years, newspapers, magazines have been printing their success stories, urging the youth of the nation to follow these guys' example. Now, that was in 1928. 25 years later, this is what had happened to these men. The president of the largest independent steel company, Charles Schwab, he lived on borrowed money for the last 5 years of his life, and he died broke. The greatest wheat speculator, Arthur Cutton, died insolvent. The president of the New York Stock Exchange, Richard Whitney, served a term in Sing Sing prison. The member of the president's cabinet, Albert Fall, was pardoned from prison so he could die at home. The greatest bear in Wall Street, Jesse Livermore, committed suicide. The president of the Bank of International Settlements, Leon Fraser, committed suicide. The head of the world's greatest monopoly, Ivar Druga, committed suicide. This is an uncertain world. As much as we would like to be in control of the future, we're not. The future of our work, the future of our life, it is uncertain. Yet in this uncertain world, James has a word of help for us. It's in the next line, line 15, the last of the three lines there. James says this, line 15, he says, instead, you ought to say, if it is the Lord's will, we will live and do this or that. Now, James doesn't just sort of mean that we should glibly say, if the Lord wills, to every single sentence that we ever say. He's not encouraging pious platitudes. But he is urging us to depend on the Lord Jesus. Now, it won't have escaped your attention, unless you are incredibly dozy, it will not have escaped your attention that next week we've got a general election coming up. And we're all being asked, as the British public, to vote for the party that we most want to be in charge of this country. Now, I must admit, at the moment, I'm a bit of a floating voter. I don't know who I'm going to vote for. But there is a choice to be made, isn't there? Who will we vote for? Who are we going to put that cross against? Labour? Tories? Lib Dem? Someone else? Maybe the Greens? Maybe UKIP? I don't know. Who are you going to vote for? Well, this passage of the Bible is reminding us that we have a far more significant choice to make. Not who will we depend on to run this country, but who will we depend on to run our own lives? Who will I depend on to run my life? Who will you depend on to run your life? James is saying the choice is very, very simple. Will we depend on ourselves? Will we depend on ourselves like the people in line 13? Or will we depend on the Lord Jesus Christ, as James encourages us to do in line 15? Who do we think will run our lives best, both in the here and now, and also as we face death? Who should we depend on? Ourselves or the Lord Jesus Christ? James is telling us we should depend on Jesus. James is convinced of that because of who Jesus was. James was convinced that Jesus is the one around whom all this universe revolves. And James should know. He grew up with Jesus. He met with the risen Jesus. He was killed for his belief in Jesus. James was convinced that Jesus is in charge of the future that us humans, we find so uncertain. Do you believe that is who Jesus is? I wonder if you remember that classic, The Wizard of Oz. You remember how Dorothy and the Tin Man and all the rest of them, they follow the Yellow Brick Road. They follow the Yellow Brick Road right to the end, to the Emerald City, to meet with the great wizard. And when they get there, they're ushered in to meet the wizard. And they find themselves standing in front of this huge, enormous face and hearing this big, bold voice. But just then, Toto, Dorothy's dog, darts off. He decides to do a little bit of investigating. He starts nosing around the room. And then Toto, he nips under a curtain. And then he pulls the curtain back with his teeth to reveal the real wizard. And it's just a little old man in a little old booth, projecting his face onto a big screen and speaking into a microphone. The whole thing is a fraud, a lie. Now, if you are uncertain about Jesus' credentials, can I suggest, if I may, that you be like Toto the dog? Get investigating. Nose around. Check things out. Determine who Jesus is. If he's a fraud, if he's not really God, if he's really like the little old man in the little old booth, and Christians are just making it all up, then we should forget about him. Jesus is irrelevant. Don't depend on him. It's a waste of time. He can't help you through life. He can't help you through death. But if Jesus really is who he claims to be, if he is, well, then he is the only one worth depending on. He is the best guide for this life. He is the only one that can get us through death to life for all eternity with him in heaven. So as we close, can I ask, who are you voting for? Who are you voting for? In fact, we've already voted. All of us here will have one of those two boxes marked at the moment. Each of us will. Either we'll be depending on ourselves, or will we be depending on the Lord Jesus Christ? Each of us will have one of those two marked at the moment. But now we can change our vote. Like Brian Sedgemoor, the MP who switched allegiance from Labour to Lib Dem at the start of the week because he was fed up with all Tony Blair's lies about Iraq. We too, we can switch allegiance. We can switch from depending on ourselves to depending on the Lord Jesus Christ. We know it is foolish to depend on ourselves. It's a disastrous vote. We've seen that. The future is so uncertain. It is totally uncertain. And we cannot control the future. But if Jesus stands up to his credentials, if he does, if he is who he says he is, well, he alone is worth depending on. He alone. Because he alone is the one that controls the future. Thank you for listening. I'm going to hand back to Charmaine now.